Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your guys' host from Phoenix, Arizona, Dakota Morgan. A little bit of a switcheroo there than usual. We have today a wonderful guest on the show. It's filled with laughs, creativity, so many good things. Anthony Oliveira is on the show. Anthony and I talk about so many things between the LGBT community and also, you know, Iceman and X-Men. We also talk about, you know, creativity as in a such and the meaning behind a lot of creativity and a lot of the hidden messages in there. We get really deep into Shakespeare and stuff, but also a little bit about cats. So hopefully you guys enjoy this episode. And if you're creative, you're really going to like this one. I usually say that, but this is one I really, really do think makes you really think about storytelling, I think, because Anthony is a really good writer, probably better than me, actually way better than me. Also, folks, they've been out for a little bit. I've been posting them on my social media, and I want to tell you guys, the first merch is out for the Comic Chronicle Podcast, featuring our Man of Podcast, I'll call it, logo on there, you know, with the ripping the shirt open, and it says Comic Chronicle Podcast on it. It looks like a familiar superhero, say the least. I'm trying to do this so I don't get sued. That logo is officially on some buttons, so if you guys want a button, they're 1.5 inches in radius, so they're 1.5. And if you guys want some of those buttons with the white background and our little logo on there, they are only $2. And that is with free shipping. Free shipping to at least the United States. If you're in Canada, and you may be able to squeeze you in there a little bit. But if you're outside the United States or Canada, I'm terribly sorry. I may be able to get you guys in later on. Who knows? But it's free shipping, folks. Only $2 with a button. And if you want one, email me at filmworld97@gmail.com. That's filmworld97@gmail.com. If you guys want the first merchandise, we got more merchandise down the road for this podcast. So if you guys want to support the show, be really helpful. But also be really helpful is if you guys would subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or comiccronicle.podbean.com. You guys are some truly amazing fans. And I know I'm asking a lot, you know, maybe buy merch or subscribe and shit like that, leave a review. I know. But you guys are amazing and you support the show in so many fun ways. And if you use hashtag the Comic Chronicle Podcast on a post on Instagram or Twitter, maybe get a shout out on the show. Thanks everyone for tuning into the episode. And here's my talk with Anthony. And we're recording. Anthony, welcome to the show. I'll say it again. I said it before the intro. Well, before the starting. Yeah.
Very happy to be here.
Yeah, this is, I got to say, it's an honor. It really is, because I've been told, and I've seen it myself, you are kind of a icon in a sense here.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah. I want to say I'm a writer. I know the words here. But it's one of those icon, but also like someone or inspiration I maybe want to say.
Oh, well, this is already the best interview I've ever had. Keep going. I want to hear more about how great I am.
Well, you know, let me give you the lawn chair and I'll feed you some grapes as I tell you, Your Highness.
Oh, perfect. Yes.
Honestly. I'm with you. That doesn't sound too bad right about now. It's been a long fucking week. If someone wants to feed me grapes.
In Canada, it's freezing cold out here. So the idea of being on a lawn is so alien to my way of life.
Oh.
I'm hiding indoors.
What is, well, as a mid, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, but I grew up 16 years, born and raised in Midwestern Illinois here in the States. So I feel you on that. What is a lawn for 6 months? Like, well, you have no idea. So,
yeah.
No.
That's a skiing rink. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I definitely wanted to say that in the beginning here and, you know, not to blow you too much. But I wanted to tell you the truth because, you know, I did a little bit more research on you because I'm a fan of what you do. And I did a little bit more research. I'm like, wow, there's a huge fan base for Anthony right now. Like everyone, like, and it's mostly a certain community, like the LGBT community is also like, they're the ones who's told me, like, because I talked to a few people, and they're like, oh, Anthony? Oh, huge icon. I'm like, really?
Well, I try to rep for my people. Yeah, that's something I definitely advocate for in all my writing, in every angle. If you're bringing me to the table, that's what you're bringing, I think, is an important thing to insist on.
Fair enough. I mean, I definitely want to say, I think the Queer Guide to Comic-Con really shows that.
Oh, yeah, that was a fun little project. I just wanted to sit down and, because I grew up like suburban kid, super shy, and before, there's not actually a lot, as soon as you think about it, there's not a lot of queer, especially when I was coming up, queer spaces that are like teen friendly, like,
oh, no.
So much of the scene grew up around the bars and the village, and so like Comic-Con really was one of the first queer spaces I ever saw as a kid before I was even out. So the queer guy to Comic-Con was really just like an attempt to be like, here's like some ways to find community that you are part of, to find literature that you will find yourself in, to sort of have fun and engage at the level that you're comfortable engaging with. So that's what I wanted to do with that little, just like a little segment in a larger project about, it was called Pros and Cons, like a larger Comic-Con guide. And I was like, well, okay, well, let's talk about like how to navigate Artist's Alley and like how to find books that you will find yourself reflected in, stuff like that.
Brilliant. Just brilliant. It's one of those things where you're like, oh my God, why didn't I think of that? Like, holy shit. It's one of those dumbfounded moments where you look on, like, I don't know, like the guy who invented tape or something like that. You're like, damn it. Or the one who invented the seatbelt in the 80s. It's like, oh, shit, yeah, that's a good idea right there. Whose family's now on private island.
We're in a weird moment in comic book history where the fan base is incredibly queer, and the market, especially like the big two markets, still have not figured out how to engage them. There's still, there are these huge leviathans that steer so slowly that I don't even have to be good at what I do.
Wow. I think you just admitted something.
So it's like, well, there's a real attempt to get a groundswell movement going in comics that I'm very proud to be a part of.
I love it. I love it with a passion. Like, it's not a subject. I love how you're like, I don't even really have to be that good. I'm just that was the most like Tom Cruise like moment or like big name actor moment you could say of like, I could give this movie a little bit of work and it's gonna do $1 billion and I'll be fine. Like,
like think about it. Like, we've been telling the same straight stories for 6,000 years and I'm tired of them. Anything you do is going to be novel. I just came from our screening of Cats and it's like, what are you gonna do? Fail? Like, the movie's already failed. Like, be willing to take a risk these days. Oh my God, I'm so sick of it.
Did you like Cats? That's a big question.
I loved Cats.
Did you?
It was one of the best. I sat there in a movie theater with four people. Mm. I was like, the problem is not the movie. The problem is the audience. So I put together, I program a film series up here in Canada called the Dumpster Raccoon series, where we just show, we go through the garbage of cinema and like see if anyone threw out anything worth seeing. So we put together a Jellicle Ball, which was just like a sing-along screening of Cats. With an open stage, so we had drag queens, drag kings, drag performers, burlesque dancers, tap dancers, live painters, just performing during the movie. And it was completely sold out all weekend. I've never been so tired. I've never put on so much like cat makeup and cat costumes. We had like a 5-foot Judi Dench head that was like talking for the ending. It was amazing.
This is brilliant. I wanted that. I've learned a fact here is that all cool things happen outside of America, but
oh, it's true. Yeah, a lost country. Such a shame.
there's so much. I already deal with enough shade because I get it so much from buddies of mine who live in London right now, and now
like, England has any basis.
I know. I'm like, one word, Brexit. They're like, yeah, but this is the one thing in the past 100 years. I'm like, fair enough. After colonialism, you guys did pretty well. You weren't a much of an asshole.
Fair enough. I mean, obviously Canada is rife with its problems. I'm just kidding. But no. it is. I mean, there is like the fascinating thing is there is kind of like a Marvel North happening up here right now. Like, I'm working on the Emperor Hulkling book right now with Chip Zdarsky, and it's like so easy. We can just like meet up whenever we need to work on that book. So
just a big name drop
Jeff
right there.
Here's up here. Jim Zub's up here. Like, Jim came to our cat screening, actually. He was posting a video from it the other day.
It's amazing. I'm a huge theater fan, and I've done theater, too, because I do work in comics. I work as a comic book writer, and also I work in film in, like, 7 or 8 different jobs. But I started in theater. I did a theater play not too long ago, last year, a couple months ago, and they're always such long performances. But when I heard about Cats, I'm like, very interesting. So I'm like, I want to see it myself sort of thing. But
do you know the stage play? Do you know
I know a little bit about it. Yeah, I was taught a little bit about it. So I'm going in with like a little bit of knowledge of the play performance. But But I was also, I'm a huge guy, a fan of the new Les Mis. So, well, quote unquote new, because it's a little bit older. People are like, oh, that one's terrible. That movie's going to trash one up. Oh, and I'm like, dude, yeah, you hear?
Same director, actually.
Is it really?
Yeah. Oh. So like he made Les Mis, and they were like, well, do it again. He made Cats. That's why it was rushed to theaters, because they wanted it to have a Christmas release the same way Les Mis did.
Oh.
And so that's why they had to redo some of the special effects and everything after it came out. It was the first movie to be patched in cinemas. Like, they made the theaters download a new version of it because 15 effects were completely unfinished. So, like, there was a moment where you could see Judi Dench's wedding ring.
I saw that. I saw the picture. I was like, wow.
But Cats is amazing. It's like, it's written by T.S. Eliot. Like, you literally could not have a bigger poet writing the text.
That's true.
And he's just like goofing off, writing poems for his niece, each one about a different cat. And then they turned it into a musical. And it's like, it's better than Rocky Horror because, like, a cat shows up, sings about itself, and then the cat disappears again. It's a real disaster. I really suggest not to advocate any kind of, like, I know you guys are Americans. I don't know what's legal down there. Weed is completely legal up in Canada now.
Yeah.
So it's like the audience was of mixed states of mind, is how I'll put it.
Bruh, I mean, you know, that I was told by some few film friends of mine, like, there was, a fellow comic writer, known one too, but I can't remember who the hell it was, turned Cats into a drinking game. To be like, how many can you drink? How many bottles, like, vodka can you drink before the end? And they're like, I've only made it through one. Oh, no, Shooters or something like that. Or something along those lines. I was like, oh, okay. Well, I kind of, but don't get me wrong, legal or not, there may or may not be some smoke in the air that sounds familiar when watching Cats.
My neurochemistry is such that the idea of getting stoned or drunk is like I'm already too tweaked at all times in my natural
state. Oh, fair enough. I get that.
Not understand it as a phenomenon, but like we screened Gremlins the month before for Christmas.
The first one?
And yeah, the first one yes. As a Christmas movie. And we had a guest who was, she was fine during the Mogwai scenes, but as soon as they started turning into monsters, the poor lady was not having a good time.
Oh no! Oh no! See, that's, but you know what? It's Gremlins. You should know what you're getting into for that one. Come on.
Oh, it's a classic. So good.
You know, you say they're dumpster fire movies, and folks at home, we will get to comics, but but you say dumpster fire movies, but I have a strange feeling. So many of my movies I love and enjoy that they're going to be in that list for your guys'.
Something doesn't have to be good to be great philosophy. That like a well-made film is only one way a film can be good. I think I appreciate enthusiasm. I appreciate the expense of effort. I appreciate watching talented people waste their time.
It's
one of my favorite things. And that's what Cats was. Gremlins is a different problem because it basically reinvented the way we think about movies. It sort of is one of the first kind of 80s tragic comedy movies. It's so difficult to classify. We had to rethink the rating system for films. It's why there is such a rating as PG-13, because kids were going into Gremlins and it was way too scary for them. So it's like, it's very much like a my first horror movie kind of movie. And that's why I'm fascinated by it.
I never thought about it like that.
Yeah, it's literally why they had to reclassify films, because it's just like, it's difficult to fit. And that's what I'm interested in when it comes to anything, really, genre-wise.
Mm-hmm.
It's why I'm interested in comics. It's why I'm interested in the movies I like to see and work on. It's like, I like when things press against what they're allowed to do.
This is why you're the better writer. This is why. We may work in the same ministry, but this is why you're a little bit better of a writer.
Ministry? You have some kind of Christian background to use that kind of phraseology.
Oh, industry? I didn't say ministry. I meant industry.
Oh, I said ministry. I was like, no. Oh, that's
no.
An interesting glimpse into your psyche.
No. Industry. No. If it was ministry, they would. No. A lot of things would catch on fire. No. So, did this affect you becoming a writer in a sense here? Like all these like really cool, like the movies and everything like that. Did that affect you becoming a writer?
I've always been, I was basically raised by pop culture in a lot of ways. I'm the son of two immigrants who were very insular when they came to Canada. I basically learned English from watching cartoons. Like I learned how to speak English from like He-Man and G.I. Joe and Transformers. I really grew up eating pop culture, like, a lot. And figuring out the mechanics of story has always been really my life's goal. I did a PhD in English literature, 17th century literature. I don't believe in a classification between high and low culture, because when you read Shakespeare, it's like that is like the blockbuster movie of his age. So if you understand how to read Shakespeare, then you understand how to read. Actually, for the Emperor Hulkling comic I'm doing right now, one of the inspirations for it is the Henriad, the Shakespeare's tetralogy, which is like, it's about, if you don't know it, the Henriad is about Prince Hal, who's basically like this reluctant prince who comes into his own at a moment when his father's power is waning, at a moment in English history that is very troubled, that is very much about uniting a kingdom in the same way Shakespeare was thinking quite specifically about the problems of unifying into sort of an Englishness and a Britishness. But Hal is a character who kind of is a goof-off. He's just been playing around at the bar his whole life, and he knows that destiny is about to come calling for him, and he has to decide how to negotiate that and how it will affect his old life and what kind of self-conscious remodeling he has to do of himself. So as we're breaking the story on Teddy Altman, Hulkling, I've been thinking a lot about the tetralogy as a way to model sort of his journey as a character.
That is beautiful.
I mean, but also, like, there's a lot of Barbarella in there. There's a lot of Flash Gordon. Like, you gotta have that whole gee whiz alien space fight ray gun stuff, which is also such a huge part of what I grew up on. Like I said, He-Man as the ultimate pastiche. He-Man is really, in a lot of ways to me, one of the ultimate, like, the queer version of Flash Gordon. The story of He-Man is about this boy who, if you think about it, He-Man's disguise is literally that he takes off his shirt and he's so muscly and tan, and he's so gay in his normal life that no one can put together that's who he is, right? Like,
it's true!
Like, He-Man is about masculinity as disguise, and that to me is like one of the queerest stories, and that to me has kind of a bit of what Teddy goes through as a character in the Marvel universe. Like, his dad is the ultimate, like, super masculine hero. It doesn't get more Marvel than Captain Marvel, right? Like,
that's true.
What does it mean to be the heir to that title?
You've never
as a gay man.
I want to definitely say, Anthony, is you. I can't see my face. Well, I mean, I wish you could see the face reaction that I was giving during that whole thing of, like, holy shit, he's so right. Like, oh, it's,
I would die to write He-Man, and no one will ever let me touch it.
Why? No, that's bogus. I mean, come on. You know what? After hearing this story that He-Man taught you how to speak English, or, like, how to speak English, right? Like,
there's a picture of me sitting in front of the TV cross-legged when I was three watching He-Man.
Post it and tell the story. Come on, that's how you get it. That's how you get the right He-Man.
You're right. Maybe it's about marketing. Maybe I should talk to my agent.
Anthony for He-Man.
I don't know who even owned controls. I heard Kevin Smith was doing a project, but I think it, like, literally fell through this week, the He-Man movie that they were going to do.
Did it really?
I think so. It's a tough one to adapt live action, because you really want to do... Have you seen the original movie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, we never even see him as Prince Adam, right? Like, even though that movie is called He-Man, he's not really the protagonist of that movie. The protagonist is Courtney Cox and what's his name from Star Trek Voyager.
Oh,
just because he's
a
tough character to put in front of the camera, right? Because, like, how do you play that dual role? I don't know too many, like, action movie actors who could also play... Like, I'm Prince Adam, you know, like that voice he was always doing. So.
It's true. Well, you know what? I will do you one better. Do you remember that short that came out a couple years ago, that He-Man and Skeletor in a bar?
Oh, the dancing thing?
Yeah, yes, that is how you do it.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of Shakespeare, right? Like, He-Man is built around Hamlet, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Skeletor is Keldor, his uncle, who's trying to seize the throne. Like, that whole thread, like, Hamlet's crisis is He-Man's crisis of, like, well, how do you be the mask hero in a world that is kind of done having mask heroes in it?
Yeah. Yeah. Come on. After hearing this shit, come on, world. How can you not let this man write for He-Man? Come on.
Give me that movie. I'll take it.
There's so many books out for He-Man. There's the He-Man meets the Injustice world from the video game franchise. I mean, come on. Like... All right. I fully support you and He-Man. And the moment I see on Twitter, it's like, hey, I got a He-Man, I'm going to be like, yes.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll have to fix that haircut he has, though, that page boy haircut. Oh, boy.
You know what I mean? A coconut head from Ned's Declassified, too? Either one. I don't know if you know that show or not, but oh, that was a good show back
Which
in the day.
Which show? Coconut Head?
No. Well, that was the name of the character who had the He-Man haircut. But it was a show called Ned's Declassified on Nickelodeon.
Oh, no. I'm older. I think I'm older than you. I don't know it.
Probably. It was. Yeah, people older than me watch the show, too. Okay. I just want to vouch for that one. It was.
Also,
sometimes
there's this weird thing as a Canadian where sometimes it feels like, oh, there's no difference. And sometimes it's like, it's like living in a parallel universe where it's like, oh, yeah, we had that show, but it was like this instead. Like, we had Sesame Park instead. Well, we had Sesame Street, but we also had Sesame Park and, like, with, like, a polar bear and, like, a French-speaking otter.
That sounds cooler. What is this? I'd rather take a French-speaking otter, like, oui, oui, yeah, yeah. So, like, that would be amazing.
Oh, well, he was Quebecois, so he doesn't do, he's got a much more, like, robust sounding accent than the Parisian nasal.
He wasn't. So you mean to tell me he wasn't like a ratatouille otter?
No. They had like, they taught you French. There was like a plane. There was a woman who flew a plane. I don't know. I'd have to look into Basil the bear. That was the bear. Oh my god.
Oh, see, someone. I wish I could remember the name of the person who told me this. There's some, because I have a bunch of friends up in Canada. And someone told me, they were like, I think it was off the record too, was Canada is like America, but Earth 2.
Cause it's just, that's so, a pretty accurate way to describe it. Yeah. You know, and the healthcare. I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
It's not an accident there's so many Canadian writers up here, because to be a writer, you need to be able to live. American writers die young.
Oh my God. It's so true, and they're so sad. Yeah, we don't make, because we're, like, so stressed. We're, like, the survivor of ramen noodles and pizza rolls. It's like, how are we living? We're not.
By the time this podcast comes out, maybe you'll already have gotten rid of Trump, and your nation will be experiencing a new golden age. I don't know.
In 2 weeks? I mean, it's not coming out this upcoming Monday as this recording, but the week after? I've been waiting 3 years. It ain't going to happen. Oh, God. Man, this is already turning into, like, the best podcast of the year. Hey folks, Dakota here with a little bit of an ad break for you guys today. Do you guys like reading comics? Obviously, if you listen to the show, you do. What the fuck am I talking about? Then you guys, if you're in Arizona, which a good majority of the fan base is, shout out to the ones in Canada though, you guys can go to Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona, located at 5801 West Glendale Avenue in Glendale, Arizona. I gotta say, folks, I've been going here for a long time now. I've been to a few different comic book stores in Arizona in my 6 years of living here so far, and this may change due to the recording nature, but whatever. So, I love going to Drawn to Comics. I really do. Ken, who runs it, is amazing, fucking laid-back dude. He's a wonderful guy. He's been on the show, ladies and gentlemen, before, and it's a really fun place to pick up the book. So, Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona, get yourself a box, you know? Go in, maybe just check it out. It's a fun place to escape into. All the workers there are fucking wonderful folks. They really are. It's just like family at this point, at least for me. And it's a fun world to go into. There's collectibles there. There's toys. There's comics. You know, and you just get your box and reserve some books and whatnot. We've had people on the show who've written and drawn comics, you know. Go in and pick up their work, folks. Jesus Christ. It ain't that difficult. So go to Drawn the Comics in Glendale, Arizona, folks. You guys can check them out also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks, everyone. Now back to the show. Oh, God.
Oh, good. That's nice to hear.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's too often that, you know, we do so many things on the podcast. Like, we talk so, sometimes we get deep. Like, we got really deep on the last recording I did not too long ago. Like, we got really deep and kind of, like, personal and stuff like that. But, it's often, you always got to have a good time. And, you know, you're telling the truth as a Canadian. Being like, American writers don't really live that long. And if you do, you're not, you really became really rich, like, or some, I don't know. I really don't know.
I think it's important. The way a culture supports the arts is important. Like, yeah. And whether that is through patronage, whether that is through a good social net. I mean, it is hard to, there is a real class divide in who gets to write. And some of it is as basic as, is it possible to live while you're pursuing your dream? Is a really important question to be able to answer. If I get injured, how will I survive? You know, that's like a real, I mean, writers, maybe more than anybody, writers have to be able to support themselves. Yeah, and like, it shapes the kind of art you get to make. It shapes the kind of career you get to have.
America supports one type of art, and I will vouch for this, and it's called porn. But
are you big porn producers?
No. Yes, I want to say
porn consumers. Oh,
it's producing. Yes, and consuming. I know all about this business because I had a few friends of mine. I get job offers all the time to work in it. I will go on record and say this, but like I say no, because like I'm busy enough. But there's also the fact of, someone said this not too long ago. I wish I could remember names. I'm terrible with names. I'm even trying to drink some coffee to help reactivate the brain. But someone gave a tweet saying, hey, congratulations, you're doing the job you wanted to do since your childhood, and you're making your childhood dreams come true. Now, what do you do to make a living? Like, oh, shit. Like, ooh.
I firmly believe podcasts are the nudes of the mind.
Do you really? That? This is why you're the better writer, Anthony. I swear. Oh, put that on a t-shirt. You could sell that for your podcast, too. Put it on a t-shirt. Like,
Well, my podcast right now is 17th century poetry, but we'll see. We'll see what comes after that. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't think you could put that on a t-shirt for that. You could. Marketing's weird. So the thing I want to ask you as a writer, come in, is, so you try to bring a lot of, it seems like you want to bring a lot of Shakespearean to your writing. Is that normally what you try to bring to pieces that you write? Or like, what is your flavor, I like to call it?
No, I think that Shakespeare is not, like, it's when I sit there, actually it's funny because I am writing a lot of alien characters for this particular arc, and it's like, oh, weird, would this, like, sometimes there are paraphrases of things that are, like, from a beat from Shakespeare or a beat from the Bible. It's like, why does this Cree warrior know this?
I mean,
it helps that he really is, I mean, he's not overrated. Like, he does know how to assemble a story, so he's not a bad place to start. But actually, what I have different in my mind than Shakespeare is, like, I really am, as I mentioned, the son of two immigrants. Like, I really came up from a very religious household. Mm-hmm. And that architecture is still very much in my brain. The podcast I work on is actually about Paradise Lost, Milton's poem about the fall of man, but from the perspective of Satan. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of like, obviously, especially as a queer person, like, the traumas of Catholicism tend to linger, and like, the aesthetics of Catholicism are so fascinating and mystical and interesting to me that even as my own, like, religious beliefs maybe don't match those things anymore, it's still very much the language I speak in as an artist. I have the next project I'm working on is sort of a retelling of Paradise Lost as kind of a queer YA thing. So that's very much one of the obsessions of my work, is navigating a kind of secularization moment in a space of being haunted by what came before.
That's beautiful, to say the least. That's
in a way that Shakespeare isn't, actually. Like, Shakespeare, there's very little evidence when you read Shakespeare's plays that he gives any shit whatsoever about, like, what happens after you die or anything like that. He's very much sort of a comfortable secular atheist in a way that, for example, Marlowe is not, or Milton is not. Mm-hmm. Like, there actually are many queerer writers around Shakespeare who are much more interested in these questions than he ever was. In the same way that you'll never be watching, like, a Quentin Tarantino movie and be like, oh, he really cares about the afterlife, right? Like, he assembles a kind of story that, once you know its patterns, are quite universal to his work.
I love that. All right. You've left me at a loss of words. And on a podcast, that's a terrible thing. But I'm, like, just flabbergasted at the moment about that, because it's a beautiful way to try to do it. Like, I kind of relate to that. Because as a writer myself, I try to bring in a lot of, like, maybe my troubles and, you know, maybe a little bit of my past. I would say actually a lot of my past, because...
What's your work obsessed with?
Finding your true self and respecting the world around you.
Okay.
That's a lot of mine. Like, there's a lot of mine that, especially, like, we maybe use, like, giant monsters meets the Vietnam War. You're like, oh, it's all a kaiju thing, right? It's like, yeah, but it's also in the sense of, you know, as our soldiers discover, they don't, this is Operation Kaiju Shield out now, the soldiers discover that you know, maybe this is like, this is new nature. This is nature. And maybe, yes, we created them, but maybe we should just leave them be. Almost Lost Worldian in a type. Like, we shouldn't just be killing these things because they're monsters. And maybe they're actually somewhat not all bad. You know, just because they look evil. And right. So it's like,
Yeah.
That's one
it's
of
funny,
them.
Like, it is funny you look back in the history and it's like, kaiju as a phenomenon really do, they really are like the quintessential 20th century invention for storytelling. Cause they're kind of a way to like, okay, humanity finally has the technology to end the world. Humanity has finally developed the atom bomb. We can see sort of the sublime erupt into our world as something we made. And then the first response to that artistically, the first response to Hiroshima artistically is Godzilla, right? Like, once you've seen that level of destruction and recognize it is man's fault, Godzilla becomes the icon for thinking about those problems, right? And like, that's why all those Godzilla movies are like always this like war room of people on the phone and like, oh my god, he's moving here, what are we gonna do? Yep. We woke him up. I've never written anything kaiju adjacent, but I love watching these sort of weird, like that last Godzilla movie was really like ponderously beautiful. I really liked that.
Oh, you and me both. It. Yeah, I'm a huge giant monster fan since probably 2 or 3 years old. That was my first cartoon, was Godzilla the series in 98. Like that was, and since then it's just huge, like VHS all the time from Blockbuster and Hollywood Video and watch from my grams, like the old school Jack. Hell, we're missing a pretty big one. Do you know of the monster Ghidorah?
No, I don't, no.
Google him, because he is like, so Godzilla was with the nuclear age, and then Ghidorah was the one with, he's like a blob with like one eye and he lays eggs and stuff like that too, but he was the response to pollution in Japan. So he's a monster created from pollution, and he looks, I actually have a plushie of him here in my workshop, and it looks like this big huge poof ball with a tail, but it's really cute. And you know, he is, so every, almost all the monsters respond to something like that. And that's why I wanted to write this book right now, because we live in that world where it's like, oh, it looks evil, kill it. Like, no, hold the hell on here, folks. Okay. Like use the giant monsters in that factor. But you're right about the latest one. I have 100% of a giant fan, pun intended, of that new, latest movie. And I've actually had people on my film show I do that I'm friends with now who worked in that movie. And phenomenal. Just phenomenal. And
yeah,
with nature and everything about it. Hey folks, Dakota here, and do you guys like Dungeons & Dragons as much as I do? Because if so, you're gonna like Adventures in Green and Garb. You know, they're a really fun new group on YouTube, their whole D&D campaign group, but let me tell you what they're all about. Adventures in Green and Garb started as most D&D campaigns do, around their parents' dinner table. Last year, they decided to bring it to YouTube, though, with the addition of costumes and green screens. Come on, that's adds some really cool flavor right there. Still in the family, their Season 1 campaign is nearing its exciting conclusion, with many mysteries yet to be revealed. They hope you enjoy it as much as they love making it, and playing, doing so much with D&D. So smash that like button, subscribe and share, and look for them at this year's Gen Con. So I'm extremely excited to have these guys a part of the Comic Chronicle and Film World podcast, you know, to partner up and all that such, because they're truly wonderful people, and you guys should go subscribe and support them and give them a like. They're really, really fun. And because we've been playing throughout the commercial, I'm going to play you guys the theme that they have. The first time you're listening to this, you're going to want to go subscribe. And then we'll get right back to the podcast. Thanks, everyone.
Let us roll you a tale where heroes prevail as we wander the blight, prepared for the fight. On the edge of the world, claiming almighty glory, in spite of the cost, love and loss frame our story. We won't back now, bloodied by dragons made gory. We roll this tale for you, roll for you.
Banded by fate,
oblivion beware, watches great fires whirl, lightning cracking the air, olden powers unleashed, together taming the beast. We roll this tale for you, roll for you.
Come, then chat along, ye daring hearts. Stand and strong, be not afraid. Douse your doubts and join the fray.
keep moving on, don't quit. Greening up, one forfeit. Don't look back, stay alive, smite them, survive. Keep moving on, don't quit. Greening up, one forfeit. Don't look back, stay alive, smite them, survive. Stay fast and through, we surrender our lives to defend all the realm till that good day arrives. When we lay down our swords, body scarred and bruised, having rolled a tale for you. All for you. The edge of the world, claiming almighty glory. In spite of the cost, love and loss frame our story. We won't turn back now, bloodied by dragons made gory. We roll this tale for you, roll for you.
Yeah, I mean, the kaiju are just like one of the things I really believe is that art, especially storytelling, is like the space in which we navigate the ethical as a society. In fact, my dissertation was in a lot of ways about navigating a post-secular world, in the sense that, like, in the 17th century, the thing you have to invent is a way that you and I can have a common ethical system, even though maybe I believe in God and maybe you don't, or maybe mm-hmm. I believe in Christianity and you believe in Judaism or whatever. Like, if our moral absolutes are dictated in a different ways by different religions, how will you and I navigate a polis? And one of the ways we do that is, well, you and I may believe different things, but we both go to see Shakespeare, we both go to watch Mad Men, whatever. And the cultural becomes the way we decide on next steps and the way we feel about things and the way we respond ethically to things. So watching stuff like kaiju become the space where we think about, like, what is our responsibility to the natural world? What is our goal as we enter the Anthropocene? Is fascinating to me, even though it's not a medium I've ever had a chance to work in. I just finished reading what's his name? It was the Sobek comic. Did you read that?
No.
I think it's a Stoko comic. Really beautiful. He's like famous for his really detailed artwork. But it's about the Egyptian crocodile god Sobek, and he's sort of like being beckoned by his followers to save the day from Set, who's like his followers have taken over the temple. Oh. And just like this beautiful 24-page comic about this crocodile god making his way down the river as like a being who is ultimately amoral. Like, he ends up smashing as much as he ends up saving. Oh. But it's like a neat way to think about kaiju as like an ancient phenomenon too, as sort of the titans of old.
Yeah.
I really recommend you check it out. It's called Sobek.
Sobek. Okay. I got the pen here. I'm writing it in the notes right here. Okay, I'm definitely. Is it digital only, or is it? Can
no,
you buy it in print?
It was a physical comic. I think his. I just want to make sure I'm saying his last name right. Boom, 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 boom.
Because it sounds
James
brilliant.
Stoko. Stoko. James Stoko. Sobek. Stoko's stuff is gorgeous. He has like some really beautiful Marvel work too that he's done. He has this like very fussy, very detailed style. When you see it, you're like, oh my god, this must have taken weeks just to draw this like one image of Galactus.
Oh.
But Sobek, I think it just won an Eisner actually.
Really? Holy shit.
Yeah, really gorgeous.
Wow.
Check it out.
Okay, I'm definitely good. You know what? You got me at monsters, and you also got me at Egyptian, because I'm the type of kid that I learned my first language was ancient Egyptian with hieroglyphics. Like, I can't even say it right now. I'm drinking coffee, that was my first language. And later on, it got thrown out the window because of algebra and stuff, but fair enough.
Well, I mean, it's a version of comic books, right? Like,
it's true. It's true. I heard about that. I agree with that a whole hell of a lot. That was like the first comics was Egyptian. We don't know what the hell most of them are saying. We have an idea, but do we know? Maybe. So I gotta ask. So it's like how did you actually start in comics? Like, what was that thing where was it writing and you went directly to comics, or is it writing like, I want to do like write poems or short stories, and then you transferred to comics? Like, I'm very curious about this.
I like I said, I did the PhD and I didn't really do much creative work while I was in it, although I had this problem. I had this problem where I would submit papers and my supervisor or like the journal editor would be like, this is a good paper, but why is it so weird? Like, couldn't you just write like a normal person?
What?
I remember once I was giving a talk about Milton's poet. It was about Samson Agonistes, which is it's Milton's later poem about Samson from the Bible who famously gets his hair cut and loses all his strength. And then he gets blinded, and his last act is to use his last bit of super strength. Samson's basically a superhero. He uses his last bit of super strength to destroy the temple that he's inside, killing a bunch of Philistines with him. And it becomes this kind of way to think about terrorism. And I remember I gave a talk, I think it was in New Orleans, where I was describing this terrorist attack where this pilot killed thousands of people. And as the talk proceeded, people in the room slowly realized I was describing the plot of Star Wars. so, like, yes. As I said, like, this obsession of mine, this refusal to make a distinction between high and low culture, has always been part of my art. So it was actually very easy for me, after I finished my work, to sort of accidentally start working in sci-fi and fantasy stuff. Mm-hmm. Comics, my first comic work that I did... as I said, there's a very bustling Toronto comic arts community. We have the Toronto Comic Arts Festival is up here. And I submitted for the Toronto Comics anthology called Shout Out, which was a queer anthology where they paired artists with writers. I did a quick little 8-page comic called Daylight, which was about a superhero who very obviously... The pitch for it was Superman's boyfriend, Lois Lane. And the idea was it was like a classic superhero story, but told from the point of view of like the sassy love interest. So the idea was that it's like this very traditionally queer. I always imagine him in my head as like Kurt from Glee, although his character design was quite different by the end. But like, what if you were that guy and the person you were in love with was also a superhero and you were waiting for him to reveal both those things to you, even though you knew already that he was gay and that he was very like classic Superman, like changing in the phone booth, putting on glasses, and everyone can see it except he won't admit it. So I did that with Josh McKenzie, and then from there I did some stuff for Boom. I did a Steven Universe comic, Steven's first Pride Parade. And now I'm doing some Marvel stuff, and I have some other things that have yet to be announced. Oh, we did announce that I'm doing a comic for Boom about marginalized heroes from history. I don't think we've announced who yet, but it's a series about real-life stories about people who have been kind of erased from the historical record who really should not have been. Yeah.
You're working on some books that truly matter, and I'm not going to lie to you. Like, you're working on stuff here that we love our... Punch the Villain and shit like that, too. We love that with a passion. Trust me. I mean, Emperor Hulkling probably going to have that, too. But, you know, you have these things coming out now that are actually like, wow, this is something you want to take a look at. Like, it has more, a little bit more, I want to say a little bit more meaning, but they all have meaning. But a little bit more meaning into, like, well, you can use this in real life a lot more, maybe, than the others.
To me, I really do feel like, in a lot of ways, comics let themselves become so willing to play it safe that they forgot how to do that. I mean, when you think about it, Jack Kirby and Stan Lee were using comics to tell very vital messages, right? Like when Captain America punches Hitler on the cover in 1941, that is like the most political thing you can do. At a moment when America does not want to join the war, Jack Kirby was like, fuck these Nazis, right? Like,
that... yeah, that's true.
And being afraid, Jack is like, I mean, he's such a hero to me. Like, his willingness to, like, go to the mat and, like, beat up white supremacists in the street. Like, look it up if you don't know, like, what a brawler Jack Kirby was.
Oh, yeah, he was. Oh, yeah, he was nuts. He's cool.
Like, that's everywhere, right? Like, Black Panther emerges at a moment when the culture is desperate for a hero like that.
Yes.
And I think that it's important to do that work. It's important to remember, because otherwise these things can just become in service to the culture. They just become a way of reinforcing messages that are already there. Comics should be vitally political. They are political from the beginning. Actually, I think it's Grant Morrison who said the atom bomb and superheroes emerge at the same moment. Like, they are, it's kind of not too different from what we're talking about with kaiju, right? Like, I think he has a bit in Super Gods where he talks about how on one side of the world they invented the atom bomb, and on the other side, in New York, because it's like where the atom bomb tests were happening, and then in New York they invented another atomic superhero, the Superman, and he's the optimism that the bomb is the ultimate manifestation of pessimism of. What if you could imagine a world where someone could be honest and could be good and could stand up for truth and justice and the American way?
Yeah.
In a way that has real political potency. Like, it's very hard for me to think about Superman without almost being moved to tears, because it really is such a beautiful, iconic, hopeful, optimistic way to picture the world. What if you could just stand up for right? What if the most powerful man on Earth was also the best man on it? And it's like a fantasy. I mean, is a version of, really, I guess, the religious stuff that's been haunting me my whole life, right?
Yeah, I mean, that is the reason why, though. He is my top hero almost of all time. And I've said it before on the show, and I mentioned it, and I've also written articles about it. There was an article that said, Superman saved my life. Like, I wouldn't be here without that hopefulness of that character. Like, I've gone on record and said that with a passion. Living or dead, like, you can choose to figure out which one. But, you know, I definitely agree with you full-heartedly that comics can be political. And there's one comic that's actually getting turned into an HBO series right now. At least they ordered the pilot. And as a film guy, I've been trying to get on it, but I haven't been able to, like, get it yet. It's called DMZ by Vertigo. Did you ever hear about that?
No, I don't know anything about it.
DMZ is a book where it showed how stupid war can be. And it's based in Manhattan. So it's like the South kind of got together and they actually raided National Guard bases in the first couple of years of war, and actually kind of did the rebellion thing, but it was insurgency inside the United States. Like, what the fuck are you going to do with that? And so then they took over New Jersey, and they made it was the Free States or something like that. And the United States made, there's this whole war going on, but the whole island of Manhattan got quarantined off, blocked off, and it became a DMZ. Well, what happens to all the people that are there? All the kids, all the elderly, all the people who just live in there, like, what the shit? And they had to adapt to survive in this new world. And they're all like, and the reporter who goes in, a photographer, he goes in and try to do this. He's like, oh, we hear you guys are eating rats and shit like that. They're like, we're growing food on top of buildings. We're not savages. And they're like, oh, but you guys are like supporting the war and stuff like that. And like the lady who's escorting them around is like, no, we don't want this war. Why would you think we'd want this? There's no reason for this. Like we just want it all to end. Like, we live in a new life for 10 years now, or 5 years. And so there's a whole thing of that, of like, that is such a politically charged book. And I'm so glad they're making it right now to be like, hey, you know, if the enemy isn't there until you go looking for it.
Right.
And it's all what that is.
I have a real anxiety about post-apocalyptic literature, and I really like the thing I'm bored of is post-apocalyptic literature. The thing I'm most excited about is post-apocalyptic literature.
Yeah,
it sounds like what you're describing.
I want to vouch for it. It's not, the world doesn't end or anything like that. Like, America on the West Coast is still fine, and the world's still fine. But the UN's, it's like this whole the West East, or was it the East Coast and the Upper East Coast. Is like this whole like insurgency war sort of thing. So it's not really, and it's not meant to be the apocalypse. This is supposed to be meant modern day, because spoiler, the war ends in the end. They're not going to have that go on forever. And so, you know, like, it's this whole thing, like, it's not the apocalypse. It's just like, here's what's been on the other side of the world and here now. Like, and now you see it. And now you're living it. And it's like this whole politically charged thing, like, that goes with what you said of like politically books.
Yeah, I mean, there's a kind of movie, like the zombie movie where it's like what's it called? The Walking Dead, the early season, the Darabont season.
Oh, Fear of the Walking Dead?
No, the very first season of that show before they changed showrunners, where it's like, part of me watches it and it's like, is the fantasy here that you just kind of wish? Like, the first scene of that movie is the two cops, that TV show is the two cops complaining about their wives. And it's like, and then the next shot is like the zombie apocalypse. It's like, is the fantasy we're fulfilling here just like, wouldn't it be great if you didn't have to worry about social interaction? You could just shoot your neighbor in the face. And I'm always suspicious of that, but I'm always fascinated by texts like the one you're describing, or even like, I just finished watching Daybreak on Netflix, where it's like, what does it mean to sort of navigate a new society in the wake of breakdown? Because I do think we are, as much as we were joking about it earlier in the episode, like, we are in a moment where society is experiencing kind of a real breakdown of mores. Like, however the Trump thing falls out, so much damage has been done that it's kind of hard to imagine how you ever go back. And it's like, okay, well, then you can't go back. So how do you go forward?
That's true. That's, you're honestly 100% right. As a guy who's living in here, dealing with it all the time, and, you know, and supporting the people who I'm like, all around, I'm always like, hey, peace, love, and everything. And I could go on about that. But honestly, you're 100% right. Like, it is socially a very, I'll say, interesting time to be alive. And you're capturing it in comics right now, in books. Like, I love that with a passion. And you're capturing it, and you're going for it. Like, hey, let's still remember the positivity. And still, that's why I really wanted you on the show. I'm like, this man is positivity right here.
Well, I try, but I do think it's important at the same time, as much as I do think superheroes are so much a space for positivity. At the end of the day, and like I said, the reason I admire Jack Kirby so much is they're also a way of saying that what's right and what's legal will never quite match. And that a superhero is a person who says, I'm going to do what's right, even I'm going to obey the strictures of my conscience, even when the whole operation, like, there are the Lex Luthers and there are the Superman, right? Like,
yeah.
And Lex never does anything illegal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. You know,
and that, to me, is the space that superheroes let us think about in real four-color kind of ways, like bold, brave ways to think about what it might mean to be a good person. I'm reading Chip's book, the Daredevil book,
which is so much thinking about
the stakes of being a vigilante and well, when are you Daredevil and when are you Punisher and where's the line between being the person who is out on the limb and the person who has completely fallen off and has become sort of a monster in and of themselves. And that question is always one that fascinates me.
That's true. It's past couple years of Daredevil have really been that message there. And it's also been like so many of all the people who have been on it. It's been such a thing that hits you right in the feels and it's hit you like question yourself, you know, question what you're doing. And it's like this whole big thing, and that's why I love the current Daredevil book, and it deserves so much more love than it's getting.
It really does. He's doing such amazing, and the art is so gorgeous, which really helps. Yeah, I'm a very shallow person, so it's like, if you can write a book that gets what superheroes are about that well, and on top of everything else, Matt Murdock is hot as hell, I'm all about it. Such a great, like, Chip is really knocking it out of the park on that.
It's true. It's true. I mean, art always helps, to say the least. But you, let's just be honest with ourselves. Matt Murdock is the one, is the hero everyone truly wants to sleep with in Marvel.
I was always a big dork. I came up in the X-Men. I was always like, I always had a crush on the big loser of the group. Like, I always liked, like, Leonardo from the Turtles and, like, Cyclops from the X-Men. Like, the big nerd who just wants to be a stick in the mud for some reason always appealed to me. I never got the bad boy thing.
Fair enough.
But Matt is a good little boy. Like, I like.
Are you sure?
He's so tortured by his conscience.
Yeah. I think that's the feel bad thing coming out here, Anthony. Is like, you feel so bad for him because you always do, and you're always like, hold on, just hold on, just sit down in the chair. Let's do some work on it. Like,
well, like I said, he and I have the same damage, right? Like, we both have the Catholic freak out in our past where it's like, oh, yeah. I'm such a bad person, the Virgin Mary will never like me.
Well, then, so you are the modern day Matt Murdock.
Oh yeah, I love the crisis of conscience that it powers his books. Like, I love the awareness that even just the way Chip structured that first book where it's just like he sort of gives in to being the bad guy because the world needs a bad guy. There's some real DNA of Paradise Lost in there too, that like, well, fine. Like, you want to call me the king of hell? Well, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven.
Yeah. That's definitely a Matt there.
Yeah. You know, like, that's I think there is something to be said. It's like an old Gnostic idea that, like, the greatest follower of Christ is Judas because he does the thing that he needs him to do, even if it damns him. And there's something about Matt Murdock that has a bit of that. It's like, you care so much about being good, you're willing to be damned for it.
Yeah.
That's a fun tightrope for him to walk.
I love it. I love it. Now, I do want to say, I don't want to put a pin in everything here, but I do want to say, man, we are coming near the end of the show here. And I do want to take
so
this
fast.
Time. Trust me, I looked at the timer and I'm like, holy crap. Like, we've literally blown through this so much, but, and in a good way, but There's so many things like we could talk about, but I don't want to take too much of your time today, and I also want to help you promote what new things you have coming up here, good man.
Oh, well, I doubt no one. Marvel does not need my help selling Empire.
What are you coming? No, hold on. Marvel, what is this indie publisher you're talking about? Yeah, please exactly. Tell me more.
It is, and I'm always scared because, like, I've never been a good secret keeper.
Oh,
so
shit.
I'm
okay.
I'm terrified to even talk about it. But I am helping out on Empire this summer. I'm doing Emperor Hulkling. Me and Chip Starsky, along with Manuel Garcia, is doing the interiors. We have Jeff Deckel. We have Patrick Gleason. We have Jen Bartel. And we have Luciano Vecchio doing covers for it. Empire is going to be, I mean, it's sort of amazing when I look at the scope of the, like, Marvel space lore it's going to be activating, but I'm talking about Teddy Altman, who is so far has been notable as Wiccan's boyfriend,
yeah.
And we're finally giving him the attention I think he's always deserved.
Good.
I worked on the two of them for a little story in War of the Realms called My Drag Brunch with Loki.
Oh, I remember that! That was, yes!
That was my baby, and now we're... I'm very self-consciously, I made poor Hulkling spend the whole episode on the couch in that. And we join him on that couch at the beginning of this story, too. And we see what a frustrating few months he's had. And then Destiny comes calling. And that's the story from there.
My name is Andrew, and I am the host of a show called Rage Hunter. And on Rage Hunter, we cover the latest news and what's trending in the gaming industry with just a hint of some sarcasm and rage. You probably have this hole, you know, this void in your life that you don't know how to fill. Well, Rage Hunter is going to fill it. And the best part is we are everywhere. iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Google Play Store, Spotify, Podbean, Instagram, Twitter. So that way you can get as much rage in your life as possible. And some news while you're at it. So come check us out and be a part of the greatest gaming podcast in the universe. See you there.
I love it. I love it. You know what, though? Before we go any further here, is I do want to touch upon one more thing. You mentioned X-Men. You actually got to do X-Men, if I remember correctly, too.
Wait, what do you know that I don't know?
Wasn't it War of the Realms? You did an issue in X-Men. I remember seeing that somewhere.
It's kind of weird. It got collected in the X-Men War of the Realms book, but there were no X-Men in it. Well, there kind of was. Actually, you're right.
Yeah, like there kind of was.
There's a character in it, a drag queen character named Crystal Macron.
The name suits it all.
Yeah, she's, I don't think we've revealed much about Crystal yet, but her drag seems to be inspired by classic X-Men stories, and we've established she's from the legendary house of Jumbo Carnation. So I'm hoping we'll see her again soon, but she does seem to be connected to X-Men lore somehow. Yeah, it's true. That's correct.
See, I do a little bit of research sometimes when I know somebody, and I'm like, you know what? Let's go deep dive. Let's just pull up like the deep-rooted stuff they may not remember. Not the bad things, though. Not the bad, like... I remember. We know what happened. So what was it like on this day at the bar? Like, wait, what?
I've never done anything bad in my life. How dare you? Okay,
Saint innocent angel, Anthony.
I sit in the dark and I read and then I tell stories. That's it. I don't have a life at all.
I feel that pretty hard. Not going to lie. As a guy who works like 5 jobs in film and does comics and does podcasts and a day job, I relate hard to that. Let me tell you. Where can people find you at a social media, by the way?
Oh, I am most places as Mia Koopa, which is a Latin joke and a Super Mario Kart joke. MEAKOOPA. It's Anthony Oliveira.
Sweet. I love it. And folks, if you want to follow me, at DakotaMorgan3 on Twitter, and then at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram. Well, I don't want you to break any more. I don't want you to break any NDAs because I know how much frustrating that can be.
I did a good job. I don't think I said anything I wasn't supposed to say. I'm really proud of myself.
Okay, good. Good. I don't want you to get in trouble. I really don't go digging for shit. Oh, yeah. And sometimes people accidentally say it and they're like, can you clip that out? I'm like, yeah, no problem. I'm not, yeah, no problem at all.
If I spoiled it, I mean, the glass would shatter and two guys from Marvel would break my legs. So
that's being really kind. Just breaking your legs. I think they'd probably go for the wrist to be like one wrist at a time. Like, how many things did you spoil? Two? That's two wrists. Oh my God.
No, I think I did. I think I was okay. But it is exciting. It is really fun seeing Al Ewing is sort of the mastermind behind this particular story, and he is a really neat fan. Longtime Marvel fans are gonna love it. As I said, like, I mean, to put Teddy Altman, to put a queer character at the heart of a crossover like this is really unprecedented in like big two Marvel and DC history.
It's true.
And it's fun seeing them go out on that limb. And show, like, it's time. It really is. And so, like, having a character like Hulkling sort of be the protagonist of this arc is really exciting for me. And getting to be in on the ground floor of that is also super exciting.
Who else would you want on the ground floor than you, man? Like, I mean, I'm telling the honest truth here. I'd love to have you on the ground floor for that.
I can't wait. I can't wait till people see this script. It's so exciting.
I really am curious, though, and I was about to let you go, but I was like, I'm really curious about this, is what other characters do you think could be brought to the forefront of what you're doing with Hulkling? What other characters would you like to see, maybe from the big two?
What can I say here?
Oh, I don't want you to get in trouble, but, like, I'm just curious, like, what would you like to see? You don't have to say anything's happening.
If you're a longtime Young Avengers fan, you will see some... Teddy at some point has to talk to some old friends of his in this comic. And I know some fans who've been starving to see some of these characters will be very happy to see them front and center again.
Okay. I wasn't talking about the series, man, but okay. So it's like, well, like...
Okay. Oh, in general.
Yeah, in general. Just in general. Like how Iceman kind of like brought the attention to it for a little bit in X-Men there when he came out, which I was a super big... I know people were like, what the hell? But I was a super big fan of that. I was like, all right, this is awesome.
I mean, the thing is, like, Iceman has been gay. Like, literally the first line he ever said in any Marvel comic ever, in X-Men number one, the first thing Iceman says is, girls, ew. Like,
I'm laughing so hard over here.
His entry, he enters the scene in X-Men number one by, like, spiraling down an ice pole that he makes. Like, he's been gay since the jump. You can tell in those 90s comics, they came really close. There's a lot of scenes of him and Emma Frost after she possesses him, where she's, like, talking about how she knows his secret, and he starts freaking out. I remember when I was a kid reading the comic where him and Jean are at the mall together, and he's trying to tell her a secret. And then Onslaught shows up, and he never tells his secret. And even as a kid, I knew what that secret was. So it's like, it was nice to see it finally happen. I would love a crack at Iceman one of these days.
Oh, my God. I hope you know, you could not see my face when you were described. Like, he's always been like, you broke me.
No, he really
it's true. I mean, if you look at true.
There's been these moments where he almost came out and editorial stopped them. It was in the 90s. It happened again. If you read Marjorie Liu's arc in X-Men where she had Gabriel Walta as her artist, it's such an underrated run on X-Men. Like, the X-Men books really shine when it's like a writer who's not just like another straight white guy, because as soon as you put a minority group in the X-Men comic, it's like, oh, they get it.
Yeah.
And her run on X-Men, she's talked about it before, that she intended it to end with Iceman coming out, and they made her kill the plot, so we had to wait till Bendis came along, God bless him, finally was like, well, did you know that I'm Brian Michael Bendis and what I say goes?
I'm my name and what do you want? This? Sure, no problem.
But that long-term Iceman story has always been such a pleasure to see unfold, and I think that even watching him as a character really blossom right now in the Hickman books and in Marauders and in all these like post-Krakoa books has been really fun to see. It feels really vital. Those X books feel really vital in general right now because they're finally doing something new.
They are. And I think X-Men itself has always been the message for like peace and love and equality and sort of thing. That's why I always love X-Men. I'm a huge fan of them. That's one I would love to take a crack at as an X-Men member. For some odd reason, Dazzler suits my fancy. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah.
So many cool things about her. Oh.
We put Wiccan in a Dazzler t-shirt in my drag brunch for Loki.
Oh, that's right.
His pajama top is like from like a Dazzler tour we've never quite seen before. It looks like, if you look at it, people sometimes think it's a Venom eyes, but it's actually the Dazzler makeup on his t-shirt.
Man, you know, we could go on about X-Men for a whole episode.
Have me back.
Oh, I definitely will. Like, we could talk to be like X-Men all the way. And I've had people from X-Men on the show before, and we just talked about like so many fun things with them. God, it's one of the series I want to take a crack on so bad, but I'm already writing like 5 books right now, so I don't know if that's a good idea, but so definitely, I don't want to ask anymore. I don't want to take too much. We could just keep going on. Yeah, you will be back anytime you want.
Well, thank you for having me.
Of course. It's been an honor having you here. Is there any final words? And I swear to God, this is the final. Like, this is the final words here.
Be brave enough to be kind is how I end most things.
I love it.
So I'll say that. Be brave enough to be kind, everybody.
I love it. And stay classy, comic fans.